Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah. We are back. A little off schedule this week, but managing to find some time to do the toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. How off schedule are we? Is Wednesday, are we switching to Wednesdays temporarily? Is that a thing?
It doesn't seem like it's even really going to be temporarily. Like, I think we're going to be doing Wednesdays, right?
Yeah, maybe. Makes sense to me.
Either way, we're off. If we're not one day off, we're 2 days off. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. How dare we? But here we are.
Here we are. And we'll probably be Wednesdays, I would say, here on out. But you'll still get your once a week toy department. I gotta tell you, man, I'm in a crappy mood.
Why?
It's too early to have seasonal affective disorder, and yet I think I do.
Is it snowing yet? Because I hadn't thought, as a person living in California is wont to do, I had not so much thought about snow until I saw the forecast for this Sunday's football game in Denver, and it was like, can Jared Goff and the Rams deal with snow? And I was like, oh yeah, snow. Yikes.
Yeah.
So are you there yet?
There are some rumors of flurries overnight. Mm-hmm. I did not see them. There's no snow on the ground.
Okay.
So I'm going to sort of say no, but it's
cold enough.
It is cold and gray and about 35 degrees right now. You know, I was just in Austin this weekend where it was sunny and 80 something, and that, you know, it was hot. It was a little uncomfortable hot, but like, oh, just give me that to come back to immediately. It's cold and gray. And where the disorder part comes in, I think, is not so much that, like, oh, it's cold and gray and 35. Like, that's fine. It's the knowledge that it's going to be this gray for the next 6 months, and it's just going to get progressively colder.
Right.
That's the part that's, like, just backbreaking and makes me crabby. Mm-hmm. The other thing that has me crabby this morning is listening to local media talk about Jimmy Butler and the performance that Jimmy Butler put on yesterday, which I for one thought was delightful. Butler came to Timberwolves practice. If you haven't heard about this yet, it seems to be the topic du jour in the sports world. But Butler came to Timberwolves practice, which no one really thought he might do. Played in a scrimmage, took the third string, whipped the starters, and then yelled at everyone, basically, and then left the gym. Which, again, like, if you were making a movie about the 2018-19 Minnesota Timberwolves, right, you'd put that in your movie. You know what I mean? Like, this is maximum entertainment to me. But because it's Minnesota and people have weird hang-ups about politeness and appropriateness and blah, 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 everyone's like, oh, Jimmy's the a-hole. And for one, it's very Minnesotan to me for people to say that without actually, you know, being there or knowing any of the facts and causing waves. But more than that, why is Jimmy Butler wrong here? Like, he thinks his teammates are soft. The evidence clears, you know, seems to suggest that is correct. He is exercising his agency as a professional to maximize his ability and leave, which is the thing that people do in their careers all the time.
Yes. That's sort of the key to me if we're just talking about who is or is not out of line here. If your argument for Jimmy Butler being out of line is A, he's inappropriately forcing his way out of town when he has a year remaining on his contract, I'm calling BS because that's just how it works.
Yeah, and just stop watching basketball because you're going to see this now. As long as the CBA is in its current form, you're going to see this from players.
Well, this is the sort of thing that changes as time goes on, but this is what it is right now. So that's A, and B is if your argument is he's out of line for the way he behaved at practice, well, A, the front office deserves it, and B, look at some of the commentary from people who've played with Jimmy Butler who said this was only a little more intense than an average Jimmy Butler practice.
Right.
And that's kind of the whole point here, is that Jimmy Butler is this guy who goes psycho at practice to try to get everybody to the insane level of competitive fire you need to be a championship contender in a league that includes the Warriors and Rockets and Thunder.
And not only that, it's a level of fire that the team at present has shown quite completely and clearly to lack.
Distinctly lacks.
Yeah.
In particular, Andrew Wiggins. Because I will say, the guy I feel a little bad for here is Karl Anthony Towns, because I feel like the rap on him is a little unfair, and it's not the same as DeMarcus Cousins, because his rap comes from a different sort of attitude problem. But I would compare them just in this. When you watch just their game, the way they play the game of basketball, both of those guys, Cousins and Towns, improve every year, are just dominant at their position from a skill level perspective. And although their defense both occasionally lacks maybe what you would hope, you don't get that good without caring and working really hard. So I feel like Towns, you know, yes, he could take an approach that might be more conducive to playoff success. And I think Jimmy Butler may be able to eventually get through to him.
Could he, or could he not? And I say this as a guy who has watched a lot of Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, I don't know, man, but he's like
person.
22.
Yeah. I'm still all in on Towns. I'm all out on Wiggins and all in on Towns.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Wiggins is a different guy.
Yeah.
Because Wiggins is a guy who you see the raw potential and just the more, I would compare him more to a Dwight Howard, where the athletic ability, the God-given, as Jimmy Butler put it, I believe, potential, the athletic gifts are unparalleled, and the skill level, the work ethic, the focus and intensity is zero.
He might be the last guy in the league that you should give a big, long, guaranteed contract to.
And that's going to look really bad.
They went out of their way to do it. And
it's
going to
look really bad.
I don't even mean from an ability standpoint, you should have some questions about that at this point. I'm just talking about from a mental standpoint.
Absolutely.
That dude got paid, and he is gonna chill out here and wreck this team for quite some time. And yet, it seems like most of the people around here are siding with those other guys. And I assume that's because Jimmy says he doesn't want to be in Minnesota anymore.
I'm
so
sure
people
that's
get
what
there
it is.
Like, oh, you think you're too good for us. And
right.
You're just doing this when
Rachel
Nichols is in town, which might be true. But you know what? It's pretty smart. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
man.
So hold on. That's another criticism I don't totally understand. The whole, like, oh, it's so orchestrated. Like, as opposed to other NBA star interviews on television?
Yeah, the thing is, you should be going, oh my God, it's so orchestrated. Like marvel at that. That's like,
or not even, because it happens all the time. You should just be going, it's well orchestrated.
You're trying to maximize your leverage in a situation where you necessarily don't have all the leverage. So that's kind of a smart way to go about it, isn't it?
Showed up in town and made a scene because he's trying to force their hand. And frankly, I mean, look, Butler seems pretty adamant that he didn't leak this. So if the Timberwolves leaked it, in my mind, that's Tom Thibodeau trying to force his own hand the opposite direction, trying to diminish his own leverage in an attempt to say, listen, I just can't get enough value. Yep. You're going to have to hang around.
I so hope it happens. I really hope that he stays and that every day is a possible on-court implosion.
Well, let me just ask
or
you this.
Or that Wiggins just quits basketball. Like, there's a lot of delightful possibilities on the table.
In all seriousness, okay?
Yeah.
What is better? Is there any version of the Timberwolves where the team on the floor is better with anything they could get in exchange for Jimmy Butler on the last year of his contract, as opposed to Jimmy Butler playing pissed off at everyone, including his own teammates?
No. The best path for the Wolves is to, and Thibodeau knows this, is to keep Butler here, you know, go to the playoffs, see what noise you can make, and then bottom out and try to find the next superstar in the draft over the next 2-3 years, because they're going to suck. If he leaves, they trade him for Josh Richardson in parts. They're going to suck.
And Thibodeau's gone.
Yeah, and Thibodeau's gone, and then they're going to suck not quite enough to get a really good player, and they'll be in NBA purgatory, which for the Wolves seems to last at least a decade. So,
well, or forever. And listen, here's the other thing about this is – although I don't think it was necessarily good for the team, you know who Jimmy Butler does like? Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, Taj Gibson, like the old Bulls, all those guys who Thibodeau worked into the ground 5-7 years ago. Butler likes the way those guys practice when they're not hurt.
Yeah.
And he likes being around those guys when they're available. So... And again,
you're saying just bring on the Timber Bulls? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not buying into it. I'm just saying Butler will get by.
Yeah.
Like, if they don't trade him, he'll be there and he'll play well.
By the way, that's evidence, you know, that he likes those guys, that it's not like you have to be the Golden State Warriors for him to be happy.
Not at all. No. You just have to care as much, or you have to try to care as much as he does.
Yeah.
I'm not sure anyone will ultimately care as much as Jimmy Butler.
I don't understand
try.
How it's not blatantly obvious to Joe Wolfs fan that the stars of the existing team don't care enough.
And I still, like I said, Carl Anthony Towns is 22 years old.
Yep.
And I still believe there's hope for him in that respect.
Agreed.
There's no question he is a Hall of Fame level talent, and his skill level is at that level. And although you haven't necessarily seen the fire and hunger you might want, I still have a lot of belief it could be there. And although Andrew Wiggins is only about a year older, after 4 NBA seasons of playing every game and starting every game the last 2 years, in fact, starting every game of his career, now that I look at it, I feel like I know what that guy is, and it's not something I necessarily – it's a poor man's Rudy Gay, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a young, athletic Rudy Gay.
Which is – that's what Rudy Gay was before he tore his Achilles. Right. I mean, I think Rudy Gay has become a smarter player as he's gotten older. And look, that may happen to Wiggins, but he's a guy who doesn't necessarily help your team much right now.
All right. We agree on Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
We agree on Carl Anthony Towns, it sounds like.
I think so.
I think we agree on Andrew Wiggins.
Definitely.
I pretty much said all this the last time we talked Wolves. Yep. Let's talk about something that we do not agree on.
Yeah.
Was it homework for you to finish the rest of Forever, or did we just sort of decide to do it?
Absolutely, it was homework.
But you did it. You watched all of Forever.
Yeah, and I'm glad I did, because I would not I would not necessarily realize it, but I would regret not being able to speak specifically to just how awful the entirety of the show and especially the end was. All right.
Bring it, please bring the pain.
Okay, so I'm going to spoil this for, but I don't recommend anyone watch it, so I wouldn't recommend tuning out.
I would say tune out.
But okay, so then before I spoil the ending quickly, my general response to this show is that it's not especially funny. When it is funny, it's because Maya Rudolph is really great, and I like Catherine Keener as well, but really Maya Rudolph is a funny, and in this show I think shows herself to be a really talented actress capable of great depth, and that is the best part of the show. But generally, I found this to be an unfunny, slightly altered, Good Place-esque view of the afterlife that asks but doesn't really answer some very basic and uninteresting questions and fails to compel in any way. So that's my broad review of the show, and now I will spoil the ending.
Can I jump in?
All right.
And then we can go to the ending. I agree with you that it's not this is not a belly laugh kind of show. It's not Big Mouth.
Okay, but that's all right.
You know
it's
what
not
I mean?
Even laugh kind of show.
It's well, no, I would see that's where I would disagree. It's certainly a dramedy in the way that many of the shows that we watch are. Like I would say, for example, Insecure has long stretches where it's not trying to be funny. It's not funny and it's not trying to be funny. But
this felt like it was trying, and also there's not a single moment, not one single moment on this show that's as funny as ballpark the 27th funniest moment on the last season of Insecure.
Yeah, I see that to me is just that's just false. Like I don't really know what to say. Like,
are you telling me like you're saying there are not actual laughs, like out loud laughs?
No,
watching Insecure.
No, I'm saying that both shows are funny. Like I laughed. Did I laugh all the time at this show? No, wasn't trying to make me. It's like Master of None. You know, like that's a show that you're not always like cackling at Master of None, but it doesn't mean that it's not amusing.
I did cackle repeatedly at Master of None.
I laughed several times at this show out loud. I don't really like. I honestly, and look, we'll get to it. But I think if you made this exact same show and cast, I don't know, Justin Theroux in the Fred Armisen role,
you would
feel completely differently about it.
No, this is why I'm glad I watched the whole thing. It's because I can definitively tell you that that's not true at all.
And on top of that. I'm going to go completely the other way and say I thought it was a really excellent performance from Fred Armisen, who's doing a lot of really giving, subtle work that allowed almost everyone he was with in every scene to be funny, which is not necessarily a thing that Fred Armisen is known for, restraint. I thought this was a show that was interesting. I thought it was often went to places that I didn't know it would go. If there are more of this, I will watch it. I will watch it right away. So
can I ask what one single example of a surprising place where you didn't think it would go that was pleasing?
I would say pretty much all of the Oceanside, like when they leave the town, you have any idea what happens? The bottle episode is remarkable and completely unexpected.
I completely agree with that. The bottle episode was an excellent episode of television, and it would have, if the season had been an anthology of bottle episodes like that one in some way, I'd have been all about it. And again, this is not purely a Fred Armisen thing, because there were other episodes that he, frankly, after the first two or three episodes, he was not in the show that much. And his character was existed more as a theory that made the show suck than him even being in it, which is why I'm saying, like, it really is not about him for me at this point. I'm not denying that watching him on the screen all the time in the first couple episodes is not my favorite thing, but that's not the problem here for me. I will say the fact that they establish no real reason for or stakes in or understanding of why these people are together and love each other and then separate them and ultimately bring them back together over like meaningless conversation and then have them decide to leave the entire everything and everyone behind and spend eternity together alone on the bottom of the ocean is like
they come out of the ocean at the end. They're not spending alone for eternity together at the bottom of the ocean. They're just trying to go back to where they were before.
I guess.
Like, you literally see them coming out of the water.
Yeah, but I didn't necessarily see that as going back to where they were before going to a place where they were going to be by themselves forever.
No, they were trying to get back to Riverside. Now, whether they succeeded or not,
I'm not sure that's clear.
But
I'm not sure that's clear that they're trying to get back to Riverside. That's not how I took it at all.
I will agree with you that I feel like the reunion happens a little too quickly.
And not even too quickly. She like goes on a journey of self-discovery, discovers that she has no reason to be with this guy, and then he shows up and is like sandwiches or something. And she's like, oh, yeah, let's spend eternity together.
It's a little more than that. He's clearly gone to great length to come find her and be with her and has a different appreciation for her now that she's gone. And look, yes, like I said, it probably happens a little too quickly. I would definitely, like, if you're asking me problems I had, that would be chief among them. But to me, that's not necessarily a blight on the entire show, which I thought was really
thoughtful and
poetic at times about death and life and what life means and what stuff really does matter at the end of things.
Really?
Yeah.
What did it tell you mattered? Because it seemed to me like what they were saying at the end mattered was like being able to have stupid conversations about meaningless stuff.
No.
So what is it? What is it other than that? What have they done in their relationship throughout the entire show to indicate that they have anything good to salvage there besides that thing?
It's about connection, which is something that all of these single characters seek here in this, allegedly sort of supposed to be perfect afterlife, right?
And didn't it seem like she had more connection with Catherine Keener's character after
and I'll say this is, the show sort of shorthands this a little bit, and that would be my issue with it. But the easy connection and rapport that the two main characters have when in the good times, and there's a lot of showing of how remedial relationships can be, which is to me a very real thing, redundant. But there's also a lot of really nice moments where you see them click together, and those are the things that to me that the show is arguing that makes life worthwhile. And it's the same sort of repartee and connection that you see in that beautiful romance in the bottle episode where things really click between those two people.
Right.
And that to me is what the show is arguing is what really matters, not your work or what you did or the dumb games you're up to in the afterlife. It's that connection.
Okay. And I thought the connection between those two characters in the bottle episode was more well established by the writing and the acting in that third of an episode than the core relationship with the show was in the first three episodes that were spent developing it.
That's because they gave you all. Love in that bottle episode. It was all love, right? It was all love, except for the brief moment where they stopped to be like, "How are we going to deal with this?" With the
I guess,
people
but again, I hear what you're saying, but again, and this is really the thing to me. I've used hyperbole a couple of times, but I'm being completely serious when I say, I don't remember a single thing that was done to establish the connection you're talking about other than funny, quirky conversations about dumb stuff. And they did that like five times. And
I would say more than that, but yeah. Okay.
Maybe even seven times, but it was the same thing. And like at a certain point, it's like they show the same dumb conversation seven times that's supposed to establish a connection, and then another seven times they show seven different things that they just don't
That's life. And they, you know, there's a lot of great conversation that happens without, you know, when Fred Armisen is talking to I can't remember his name anymore, it sucks, the guy who died as a teenager, and he's trying, mm-hmm. you know, he's explaining, you know, her relationship history and all of these crappy guys that she'd met, and you know, you hear Maya Rudolph's character talk about like, yeah, he was, you know, nice, and like that in life, a lot of times those are the things that sort of move relationships. So
yeah,
I don't
think that's a good relationship. Okay. I think that's okay. Almost definitionally a bad relationship.
I don't
like I dated a bunch of horrible people. So the fact that you were just nice to me, even though we don't really fit or match and don't get along that well, like, that's not good.
But they
to me.
Do. And but then, they do. Like, I just think that's a really dark, cynical reading of the relationship that these two people have.
Like, I don't know. That's
she wasn't like she just. It wasn't like she just left and was like, "Oh, thank God I did that. I got rid of that dude." Like, she was conflicted about it the entire time. And yeah, he didn't handle it great, because that's what people do in life when you leave them. They don't always handle it great. And then you figure it out. Like, this is like, that's like, to me, like your criticism is they didn't give you a pat TV relationship.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that that's not my criticism, but I don't know. I'm not sure there's much else to say.
Yeah. I think we feel really differently about the show. I do think the show has generally done that.
Like, it's like, hold on.
Divided,
like, why
people
did she
quite
leave?
A bit.
Why did she leave?
She left because she didn't. She left because she was uncertain, right? About not just about the relationship, about life and what she was supposed to be doing in this place, and if she was going to be doing. She was afraid of doing the same thing forever and ever,
there
so she wanted
That's
to see
it.
Something else.
That's
yeah.
it. She was afraid of the monotony of forever, which Oscar was utterly unbothered by.
Correct.
Just like right before he died, she was thinking about how she really wanted to have kids, and he was dismissing it out of hand and taking off to go ski by himself.
Okay.
Like, this is not a dude who is in tune with you. This is not a relationship that makes sense
but
or
all,
really clicks.
All relationships have that, where people get out of tune, particularly ones that last for the length of time, which is why they spent all that time establishing how long it had been. Right?
Right.
Like, this is
well,
the thing that happens.
For me, the ratio didn't work. The ratio of what was good compared to what was not good was not reasonable enough for this whole show to come back to, yeah, let's head on back and spend forever together.
Okay. I would recommend this show highly. I enjoyed it a lot more than most of the things that we have talked about over the last couple of months. So, you know, I get that you feel differently, but I just want to throw that in there for anyone who's still listening. I definitely think you should watch this show. Maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't, but I liked it quite a bit.
I'm going to make a transition to a show that I thought, while utterly bizarre and in many ways more abstract than Forever, for me, did a much better job of developing and selling a sincere connection between the main characters, and that's Maniac.
Oh, I forgot we were talking about Maniac. yeah, I definitely like the show much more than Maniac. But I don't know. That's just me. You know, Maniac hits on some things that, as you know, I don't particularly care for in modern television. Which is not to say that I disliked it. I watched it all. I just felt like this is a show that is super visually interesting, and mm-hmm. that often becomes kind of like Legion did at times, a shorthand for profundity that doesn't necessarily exist.
Really, I didn't think this purported to any profundity. I realize how obnoxious that sounded. I thought it was kind of beautifully simple. That this was just a show about the truth in human connection, and that's why I say to me,
yeah. See, this to me is a show about ooh, look at what we can do. We're over here, and now we're over here, and oh, you don't know what's real, and now you don't.
I really didn't think it was unclear what was real at all.
I was I was just not emotionally invested in anyone in this show, despite the fact that I thought there were some good performances. And you know, it was amusing to watch. But I am I have no plans to think about Maniac again.
I thought it was a really interesting packaging of what was in some ways kind of like really a screwball romantic comedy in this like sci-fi thriller costume. And I thought a lot of the acting performances were excellent.
Is the screwball romantic comedy between Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, or between Justin Theroux and...
Well, I would say, like many screwball comedies, you have like the crazy friends who are also getting together. It's about Jonah Hill and Emma Stone with the other one's funny side story.
All these knowing conversations about how so your computer is sad and you had to get your mommy to come in and talk to your sad computer. And like I just feel like the show is just winking at me the whole time.
I thought that stuff was funny. I mean, like I said, I think I had more laughs in Maniac than in Forever by far.
I did not laugh one time in Maniac. Not once.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very surprising.
Name one funny thing that happened in Maniac.
I mean, this is a terrible thing to put me on the spot to do that. You know I'm not going to be able to do that.
All right.
I literally couldn't name one thing that happened in Maniac if you put it to me like that.
All right, that's fine. But now I'm in a position where I'm going to come off hating, like I sound like I hate this show.
I mean, name one funny thing that happened in Forever. Like, this is a silly game to play.
You're right, because we have to both have terrible memories. The thing to me here was just like, and I didn't hate the show. Like I said, I watched it all. You know, I gobbled it up. I went along for the ride, but I never cared about it at all. I found it to be a hard show to care about, despite some really excellent performances. But I also thought the show seemed largely to exist to be like, we've got Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, and let's give some crazy shit to do.
So. I feel like the way you're saying care about it is like not – for me, that wasn't what it was exactly. And I think maybe that's
I guess,
where the difference –
but I mean what's the end with the whole like where Emma Stone goes to find him and break him out of the asylum and they're going to go off to Salt Lake City together and like –
yeah, it's cute. It's like –
and
but
she's
here's
like
the thing,
practicing
like,
the speech on her goofy fake friend. Like,
have you seen the movie Bandits?
The Bruce Willis movie Bandits?
Yes. And Billy Bob Thornton.
I think
and
I
Kate
did,
Blanchett.
But I literally couldn't tell you one thing that happened in it.
Okay. Well, I think that probably is telling. I bring it up because what it is it's kind of a screwball romantic.
It did come out like 10, 15 years ago, didn't it?
It's old. But it's one of my favorite movies, and what it is essentially a screwball romantic comedy packaged as an action movie. And if you asked me, like, how much I cared about the characters, it would be like kind of a pointless, misleading question in my mind.
But did you care about the plot either? Like, I didn't care about the machine. I didn't care about the drug trial. I didn't care about the whether they were going to heal the world of depression or whatever.
No.
I didn't care about any of it. I didn't care. Like, I just, like, I was like, oh, there's Sally Field in a funny costume. And, oh, here's the smoking scientist lady. She's kind of amusing. You know?
Okay.
Justin Theroux playing over the top. Like,
exactly. All of that stuff, to me, all of that stuff is enjoyable and reasons to watch a show.
Right. That's what I'm at. Enjoyable, but extremely slunt.
Hold on. And to me, if there's a thing to care about, it's a broader thing about the quirkiness and sincerity of human relationships. And although, yes, the plot is rather ridiculous, and I don't care about the drug trial that clearly was never going to cure anything, and the computer designed as his mother is a very absurdist thing, and like his wig, and when they find Justin Theroux, he is literally in like a masturbatory computer sinkhole. Like, it's funny and weird and enjoyable to watch, and if there's something to care about, it's that, you know, in this wacky world, these people who have these problems find these sincere relationships. Another movie it makes me think of is like Punch Drunk Love. And that I think is a great movie, and this is a fun TV show. But just the idea of like damaged people finding their weird happy place. I find that enjoyable.
I'm not against damaged people finding their weird happy place. I don't know. I feel like it's been done better and without like this. Like all like this show is just it's just chucking artifice at you. You know what I mean? And it's like look here's oh we put Jonah Hill in another crazy wig. Oh he's got tattoos on his hands this time. I bet you didn't see that coming from Jonah. And then it's like oh, all right, here's, you know, we'll let these two play weird and here are all these weird visual flourishes and the technology's super advanced and yet also very 80s and primitive at the same time. Isn't that crazy? You know? Advertising is everywhere. And it's fine. Like I said, like I enjoy these things, but I just feel like this show is all flop sweat. There's so much flop sweat.
Okay. What you're thinking of as flop sweat and the questions you're asking in a sarcastic tone play to me as fun trivialities and reasonably sincere questions.
Yeah, I just don't like. Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't that fun. it just felt like it was trying so hard. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't want to dive too deep down this particular road. But I can't help but feel like if I have a Fred Armisen block, that perhaps your reaction here is colored by a sci-fi block.
I mean, I don't know, maybe.
Just saying.
I don't know. I mean, I like a lot of the people involved in this. As you know, I ride for Justin Theroux.
Yeah, but you like a lot of the people involved in Jonah Hill involved in the Avengers too. But you still find it kind of pointless.
Yeah, that's super pointless.
Okay,
maybe that's it.
I wonder if we agree. I imagine we do on our network television tryout of the week.
Yeah. I had really planned to unload on you here.
Why?
Because I had thought I thought you were going to go in harder on Forever than maybe you did. just in terms of just how flat out awful it was. And I was going to be like, how dare you talk about that show being awful when stuff like this still exists?
Okay, but this wasn't my idea.
I understand. But what my point was, like, this, the cool kids, like, this is truly awful television that exists in the world.
And you know what's scary is it's not. This is average bad television.
It may very well be.
Think honestly. Do you think this is – you remember that Kathy Bates Netflix show we watched? Disjointed, I think it was called?
Oh, I thought that was better than this.
Oh, I thought that was worse than this.
But that's around the level. I'm not trying to defend Disjointed.
No, I know you're not. We both thought that was bad. I'm just saying, like, that's the level we're talking about. And the fact that shows are still using laugh tracks is crazy to me.
Yeah.
It's so jarring and grating.
Well, it's worse when the show is so unfunny and the jokes are so telegraphed.
Well, so formulaic and basic, and like it almost plays as sarcastic. Like, it's so insane that these jokes that have been made a billion times on TV, this show is a completely neutered and defanged Always Sunny in Philadelphia with old people and a laugh track, which is like exactly as bad as it sounds.
I would say, and I think this is maybe the worst thing I could say about a television sitcom, it's worse than your standard CBS sitcom. Give me all the Kevin James, any of those.
I'm not sure I would say that. Like, all things, I don't know how to put this. I guess I would say it's not like of its nature worse, but this also just happens to have very few funny lines, and most of those shows at least deliver some funny punchlines here and there.
Yeah, once or twice. I just, you know, I mean, look, Vicki Lawrence is a freaking legend, man. You
David
know,
Alan like, Greer is one of my favorites.
Like, it's not like these people.
At Martin Mull?
Martin. Like, these are legitimately talented, accomplished performers who are.
I just feel like this exact cast on FX with a better group of writers could have had a show 50 times this good.
Uh-huh.
And I don't totally understand why something like this even happens.
I couldn't believe just how awful it was. And I just, like, I. Watching that second episode was like just forcing myself to try to get through it was just
I mean, that's essentially why we watched this, right? Is we saw Charlie Day and their production company attached, and we saw the four leads are all funny people that we thought would make a funny show, and it's the exact show we wouldn't have watched if we'd seen an advertisement that didn't include those names.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't there's a little part of you, right, when we set upon this experiment that was sort of hoping, like, whoa, okay, maybe network TV is a little better than we expected.
Well, and maybe here's the thing. Maybe it was a mistake to do this now. Maybe we should have waited 2 months and seen what was buzzing. Yeah, as like, maybe. This is actually good, and then watch that.
Maybe. Have you heard any buzz for what's actually good so far?
I actually feel like Manifest has gotten little bit.
Well, we're still watching that, right? That's the next thing.
That's next week. Okay. So hopefully that will deliver something more interesting than this, because this really was like the most average from a bad – like. If we were going to have a bad TV network sitcom, this is the most average possible version of it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, look, we have talked about on the show, right, that sometimes I'll do bets with my friends where we make each other watch horrible things. This is as bad as anything that I have been made to watch losing a bet, and I will happily make someone else watch it and write a report at some point. So,
like, your point about the CBS comment you made – this is way more rote and predictable than The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, way more. Yeah. I've watched Young Sheldon. Young Sheldon destroys this show in terms of quality.
So, you watched Young Sheldon?
I lost a bet. I watched Young Sheldon.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You had to write a report on Young Sheldon?
I did, in fact, have to write a report on Young Sheldon.
Amazing.
Yep.
Now, can I ask, when you've made people watch things, have you watched to make sure the report is legit?
No, but I do read the report. I enjoy reading the report. We try to actually quote the show in the report, okay. So it's hard to do that if you.
There's like a proof you have to prove.
Yeah, you want to prove you read it, right? So
proof of concept.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, I got a bet on the midterm elections coming up, so we may not. Maybe I'll bring in a report.
Oh God!
Depending on how things go.
That sounds unpleasant on every level.
Based on what I bet on, if I have to do the report, things will be unpleasent. I'm excited about Manifest, though, at least slightly more hopeful, because I had a low bar for this show and it failed to clear even that. So
it was an impressive limbo.
Yeah, my bar is a little higher for Manifest, I think.
I kind of feel like this show, even though it has nothing to do with it, lowered the bar I had for Manifest a little bit.
It's probably true, actually.
So this could play in our favor for next week. Fingers crossed.
All right. I wanted to take this opportunity to shout out Maya Rudolph, who, despite you not really liking the show, I think you thought was one of the better parts of
She's
Forever.
Great.
Correct, and she, to me,
She's
this is
charming, and her performance has depth and it's convincing.
Yeah, I would also recommend. She did a movie, and of course, I've forgotten the name of it, with John Krasinski. That is where she has a pretty much comedy-free role that I thought she was really excellent in. And I'll try to figure that out before we.
How recent?
Within the last six, 7 years, I'd say.
Is it the one where they're like sort of homeless?
Yeah, they are kind of. I think that they're. I want to say they're trying to adopt. Oh, man,
I feel like they're dry. I feel like they're living out of their car. I've seen that. It's good.
Yeah, it's.
I'll look it up.
Away We Go. It's called. Came out in 2000.
Yeah, Away We Go. I'm pretty sure they're like on a road trip.
Yeah, they're on a road trip.
Living out of their.
Yeah, trying to figure out life. I would recommend that if you like Maya Rudolph. But anyway, I feel like she's
totally agree. Great movie.
I feel like she's the MVP of this week, because not only was she, I'd say very good in Forever, I really thought that she is like stealing a ton of scenes in Big Mouth. And I don't know how far you've gotten so far.
Probably not as far as you, because there have only been so many scenes for her to steal. I've only watched two episodes.
I'm much further down the line. But as the female hormone monster,
it's not. It's just because I had other stuff to do. It's not because I haven't enjoyed it, and it's certainly not because I completely agree. I'm not a big. Oh, I know who that is. Voice guy.
Oh, I love that. I love watching just commercials and trying to figure out because I would say probably 40 to 60% of national TV commercials are now voiced by celebrities. So it's kind of a fun game to sort of figure out if you can figure out who's doing it.
Yeah, and my girlfriend is like into linguistics, and she's like knows languages, and she's really good at that sort of thing, and picks up like she does the craziest thing, which is we'll be watching a TV show and she'll be like, "Oh, that guy's Australian." You know, someone doing an American accent.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, how do you know? And she'll Google it and be like, yeah, look at that. And every time, and so stuff like that. But I usually don't notice. This is all to say, I really notice Maya Rudolph on this show.
Yeah.
It's clearly her, even though she's doing a voice to a degree. It's clearly her, and she is. She's the star.
She's, I mean, look.
And I rewatched the first season leading up to this. So, like, she even is kind of the star of the first season.
Even though she shows up towards, like, the back half, right? Like, she's not really.
Well, she shows up earlier than I remembered. Like, the second or third episode for the first time. She definitely shows up a lot more towards the back half. And that's where she really sort of starts to become the star. But I'm sure that's what happened, is they realize she's kind of the star. And so they were like, okay, let's give her more.
Yeah. And look, you've got a lot of big outsized performers. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Mantzoukas is in this, you know, like he's not a, you know, small part kind of guy. You know, there's
no, and Nick Kroll's doing a lot.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Nick Kroll's doing 17 voices. And, did you ever watch Kroll Show? I know I've asked you this before.
I've seen a few sketches. I could never really get into it. And I think, I don't know if it was you, but I was told by, I think more than one person that it's the sort of show where you had to really like lock in and watch multiple episodes to get a feel for.
Cause there's a lot of things that reference, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, it's a lot of things that reference things that already happened earlier in the show and that kind of thing.
Right.
So,
but a lot of callback I never jokes. Had the patience for it. I'm not a big sketch comedy guy. I love really good live sketch comedy, but like, TV sketch comedy, I usually find to be substandard.
Yeah, I think you would like it. I'm not going to insist that you watch it because there's just a lot of TV in the world and it's hard to catch up on something there in 4 years.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
But I bring it up because he, is doing a lot of voices and accents in that show as well. And you can sort of when he does that is when he's really laying it over the top. And like the Lola character, do you know who I'm talking about on this show?
Yeah, the friend of the hot girl.
Yeah, she's like sort of an extension of a character that he does on that show.
Uh huh.
You know what I mean? It's sort of like, so there's a lot of over the top performers. Like Jordan Peele's whole thing is over the top. The gym teacher is over the top. You know.
See, I can't even. I never even remember who Jordan Peele is.
He's
like that's
the
what
ghost
I'm saying.
Ghost of Duke Ellington.
Right. So like I don't even recognize that as Jordan Peele. The point I'm making about Maya Rudolph is like. Now that you say it, that's obviously the part Jordan Peele is playing. And yet, the only person I think of besides Nick Kroll, who's doing 12 voices, and frankly, they all sound like Nick Kroll, Maya Rudolph is the only person I think of.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, when Andrew's on screen, I'm not thinking about John Mulaney.
No. No, but
I know intellectually that he does that. But I'm not thinking about that. When the female hormone monster makes an appearance, you're like, it's Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. Yep. And it's delightful.
Yeah, and this show, like, it's just as good in season two as season one would be my response after two episodes. I don't know that its aspirations were ever gigantic. I think they're probably bigger than you might imagine hearing the log line and a description of it. But I just think it's really smart and funny and does a good job of like telling the story of puberty for all of us. And that's really cool.
Yeah. It is much like puberty. It's filthy and disgusting yet also super sincere and sweet at the same time, which is a difficult mix to pull off. So,
and as much as it's not aspiring to be super deep, it does confront some pretty serious, intense issues.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They talk about a lot of serious stuff and even get a little political in this season. So, by the way, apparently, Maya Rudolph plays two other characters on this show that I did not realize.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's the whole point about that one character is it really is it's a scene stealer every time.
Jenny Slate. We left at Jenny Slate.
Love Jenny Slate.
Yeah. Maya Rudolph is the horny wife of Fred Armisen as well.
Oh yeah, that's funny. That makes sense.
And she plays a bath mat. Which,
hey, there's a thing for you. I enjoy Fred Armisen's contributions to Big Mouth.
You do? I was wondering about that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's good.
Yeah. I'm not I
forgot. Andrew Rannells, Richard Kind. These are people who like to go over the top.
Yes. And it works. It all works really well.
Yeah. And by the way, David Thewlis joins the show in episodes that I don't think you've seen yet. And that's really great,
exciting.
Too. That's really great, too. And they've drawn the character to sort of look like him, which I think is a lot.
So, excellent.
Yeah.
Picturing Cletus the Slack-Jawed Yokel.
Yeah, it's I got nothing but good things to say about this show. I will have watched it all by the next time we talk, I'm pretty sure.
I expect I will. I think I will as well.
I did want to say once again, and I just, this show's amazing, and so zero shade to this show because I love it. But I don't understand how you can watch this and enjoy it and not also like BoJack Horseman. I don't get it. It's so good. And all of those things that you said about this show in terms of it being smart and funny and sincere and emotionally interesting are all true about BoJack. So
I don't know, maybe just the animals talking is a bridge too far for me.
I've tried and it's so great, and I'm now like, that's the show that I'm like not watching because I just don't want to be done with it.
Well, I'm not, as you know, as is well established, I am not denigrating BoJack Horseman either. I just didn't get into it, and I believe that ship has sailed for the time being.
I suspect that it has, although I will say, it's going into syndication. Comedy Central is going to be airing episodes, so.
Well, that doesn't matter, because it's on Netflix, but someday, I'm sure, when I'm old and have nothing better to do, I'll get around to it.
If you run into some old ones, you know, man, I don't know, maybe just stop for a little while, is all I'm saying. Although no one's flipping channels anymore, that's not a thing that happens, right? Hello? Did I lose you?
Yeah, I hit the mute button accidentally, and I was just laughing at you and saying, sure thing, old man. Next time I stumble upon it while I'm flipping channels, I'll just stop and watch it.
Oh, that's good.
Don't worry, I'll stick with it through the commercial break.
See, you making fun of me was much more of a reaction than I expected of that comment than total silence. That total silence really threw me.
All right, well, should we wrap up with the wrap up of Better Call Saul?
We should.
Speaking of excellent female performers, to tie it into Maya Rudolph, Seahorn, however you say her name, Ray Seahorn is amazing. And I have to say, I heard a conversation about this that I am forced to steal from because it's essentially what I was going to say anyway. But so much of her performance is physical, and so often when people are asked to do a lot of face acting, they're up a creek. And she is just so subtle and convincing and exciting and enthralling all the time. It is one of the most remarkable TV acting performances I can think of.
I mean, does the final episode in particular, but really, you can almost say the season of the show. Does this show work if she doesn't nail that expression at the moment that she realizes that Jimmy is not being sincere about Chuck, that was a con that he ran, on the bar board?
First of all, absolutely not. It doesn't work at all. The entire show doesn't work. And more importantly, there are five moments like that in every episode where the entire thing depends on her convincing you without saying a word of a very specific and important emotion.
Yep.
And every time. And that's what I'm saying.
And think about how effective the montages are. Right. These shows, and obviously there's no dialogue in any of them. Right. Like,
right,
there's stuff happening.
And look, Bob Odenkirk's very good. The other side of the story relies a lot less on that sort of stuff. That's where I think, the creators, Vince Gilligan and is it Peter Gould, get to thrive.
Yeah. But Jonathan Banks is great in those too. And, the conflict of him chasing down Werner was like.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not speaking to the acting. All of the acting on this show is excellent. I'm just saying, in terms of holding your attention and like keeping you interested, the plot, the story does a ton of work on the other side of this, because it's essentially two TV shows. You've got the Gus and Mike and Werner story, and you've got the Saul/Jimmy and
don't forget the
Kim story.
Don't forget the Salamancas in the other half. That's
whole thing. But like that stuff is at this point is moving at as fast a pace as Breaking Bad ever did. that stuff is high intensity action, basically, at this point.
Yeah.
And it stands in such stark contrast to the other side of it, which is just the slow burn, the slow and always inevitable burn of Jimmy becoming Saul and whatever happening to Kim that happens to Kim happening. And that entire half of the show depends entirely on us caring desperately what happens to Kim.
Yeah, which I do.
But it would be so easy to lose that thread given how little happens. Except that she is so incredible at selling the emotions of the thing.
Yeah.
Because
if you explain to somebody what happens on those
interior.
Yeah, because if you're just like, well, you know, they come home and you know, Kim wants to do work, and so Jimmy leaves and goes to his office. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not, it makes sense.
It's a story about little lies he's telling and little slips of character that she's having and all of the dynamics between them, but it's all in these small interior moments. And
yeah, it's not one of those things, it's like, you know, because it sometimes sounds like you're talking about jazz and it's the notes they don't play, but it's like it doesn't play like that when you watch it. Like, you are understanding all of it, and it is all gripping. It's such artfully constructed television on every level. And I'm excited because I feel like more people are noticing that this year. I feel like there's more conversation about this show because have been sleeping on it.
Did you see the Guillermo del Toro thing?
No.
Oh, well, that I think is the perfect example of what you're saying. Hold on. Let me find the exact thing that he said. Because I think you're right. That people have noticed, and he's the perfect example of this. Guillermo del Toro, Oscar-winning film director. This is a text from a series of tweets. A small reflection in the middle of Better Call Saul's new season. I like it even more than Breaking Bad. Not to be a contrarian, but because the evident stakes seem smaller, but the moral downfall strikes me as deeper and more poignant.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know that I'm willing to go there but I'm willing to consider the possibility that this is the better of the two shows.
Yeah. And he also he had a tweet that said, Kim is the key. He said, with Walter White, you were tracking a massive downfall and transformation. Better Call Saul takes you by the hand as Jimmy becomes Saul Goodman in small, painful tumbles.
Yeah, I like this quote here about there's an equation that most screenplay writers won't understand and makes the difference between Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Less plot, more story. Plot is lyrics and story is melody. And I feel like that is I think that's a thing a lot of us can relate to, you know?
Yeah. Totally. I honestly was probably never as big a Breaking Bad fan as some. Not to say I didn't love it, because I did. I'm not. It was never for me in the argument for greatest TV show of all time.
Oh, yeah. But, it is for me, for sure.
But I did love it, you know? To me, like, I'm not sure it's better than The Sopranos. I'm sure both of those shows are great. But that's where Breaking Bad is for me. So I don't know if this is better, but it's certainly in the same tier to me at worst. And there's certainly some things on this show, the most notable being Ray Seahorn's acting performance and the subtleties of it, that are totally unique and remarkable.
Yeah, it's I just feel like everyone's kind of doing it at the highest level. You know,
yeah. I was gonna say, this is not to denigrate any of the other actors,
from design to music to
everything.
to the writing, all of it.
Yep.
I don't know. Just seeing, you know, I wish every TV show was this considered.
It's the best show on television right now by a long shot, I would say, and it's
By a long shot, but yes.
Well, for me it is.
If you're saying currently on television, like airing right now.
I guess it's not airing at this exact moment anymore, but over the last 3 months, I'm saying it's by far better than anything else
gotcha.
I watch.
Okay, I didn't know if, like, I'm like, are you saying it's better than Atlanta? Are you saying it's better than Game of Thrones? Are you saying, you know,
No, but I'm saying over the summer, this was like, while it was airing, far and away the best thing airing.
I agree. And look, I know this will be a bone of contention for you, but like when I am fast forwarding and I get to promos for other AMC shows, I'm like, I'm eating steak right now. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, serve me hamburger. So
no, I mean that I agree with that. I'm still watching The Walking Dead, but there's no question that is hamburger and this was steak.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got no time for The Walking Dead. I just, like, I don't know. It's like, I'm watching this and I can't have.
And by the way, you were referring to there was Lodge 49.
It was what I was referring to. I was also talking about Breaking Bad, or not Breaking Bad, Walking Dead. But
yeah, I'm not sure.
But including Lodge 49 in that as well.
Lodge 49 is definitely not Better Call Saul by any stretch of the imagination, but it did go some weird places down the stretch, and it did end in a way that makes me fascinated about what comes next. And it's a weird little show, and I don't know how much there is to it, but I do know that there's more than meets the eye.
All right, I gotta watch more. That's one that just I don't know, I'm kind of where you're at with when I made you watch more forever. So
okay, well, I don't feel compelled to make you watch it, because it, like I said, it's a weird little show, and I'm not sure at the end of it, I can't promise you you'll get significantly more out of it than you already have. But it's got me.
Yeah,
got
and that's the thing, is like, I don't have the maybe Forever's a bad comparison, because I don't have the like grr about it. I just have that feeling of like, this is not my show. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't feel. It just doesn't feel me.
That may be true.
Yeah. All right. And with
so what's
that
the show, hopefully Manifest, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I don't know if I need a network show in my life.
Yeah. All right. If we're gonna spend an hour and a half of non-commercial time with it this week, it'd be nice if it was good.
That is correct. That's mostly why I'm hoping it's good. Do we? What else? What else are we doing this week?
I think we also got to spend an hour and a half with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
Oh yeah, we're definitely doing that.
I mean, look,
is that only an hour and a half? Because that feels like it's a solid 2 hour kind of movie.
That was a hopeful prediction. Or guesstimate, I suppose. Let's see. Runtime. Oh, it doesn't say there.
2 hours and 16 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
that's more what I was expecting.
You know, there's a few movies out now that I want to see.
Hit me, because there was another one I was thinking about.
Oh yeah.
But I'm already blanking on the name. So
was it Bad Times at the El Royale?
It was not. Is that out this week? It was something else.
Yep. That's out this week, and we also, if not this week, I think quite soon, get Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, that's not it either. Oh, First Man, that's what it was.
Yeah.
First Man's out this week.
That feels like a movie that wins an Oscar and kind of annoys me.
All right. Well, look,
Bohemian Rhapsody is still a few weeks out.
Both of those other movies you mentioned, you wanted to see, and they just weren't on my radar because I didn't know they were already out. So I would do any of those. First Man was the one that I knew was out, and I do think it's going to be an Oscar. It's shaping up to be an Oscar contender.
I mean, so. It is Oscar bait. There's no question. I don't know if I care. I mean, I definitely don't care that it's Oscar bait. I'm not sure if I care about it at all. But I'm not totally opposed to it. I will say I'm much more interested in Bad Times at the El Royale. And although I am moderately skeptical about A Star is Born, I do feel like it's having a cultural moment, and we got to see what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, look, it is a musical, right? So
there's
some hearing problems coming in.
Per se?
I don't know. Like, that's my impression, that is it is a musical per se, but I could be wrong about that. It may be like a Once situation where it's a musical,
yes,
but it feels, I didn't mind Once.
Right. I got the impression that it is sort of a musical, but it's not like a breaking out into random song and non-song moments.
Yeah,
musical.
Those I can tolerate.
Okay, so fingers crossed on that, because otherwise it's going to be a long 2 hours and 17 minutes for the both of us.
It sure is.
Oh, boy. All right, so we're subjecting ourselves to that. And you want to try to get to a double movie week and see if we can't get to Bad Times at the El Royale?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the cast alone, I think, should sell that for us.
Yeah, all right, I think I can do that.
Do you disagree? Do you disagree?
I have some skepticism just based on the trailer.
Really?
For okay. Bad Times at the El Royale. It's one of those where I'm like, oh, I like all these people, but I'm not enjoying this trailer. But
well,
you know what? Whatever. I'm in.
77% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm in.
For whatever that's worth.
You don't have to sell me. I'm ready to do it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll try to do both of those. We got Manifest to watch.
That feels like enough.
That does feel like enough.
Because the sports are
just
kicking in. You know, I gotta watch some of the sports. It's still playoff season. And
Well, not for your squad. Hey! I'm sorry. That was rude. Your squad did a heck of a job. Nice season for a young team.
Yeah, we don't have to get too into this, but they were not the better team.
No, we're not going to get into it.
They did
at all.
Not seem like the better team going in, so I feel like basically whatever happened this season was gravy, so I'm fine.
Okay, well, that's good. I do have to tell you, I'm not sure if you were going to be on board for it, but HBO does debut Camping on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought we should watch that.
Okay. Well, then that is the one other thing we're going to have to add to the pile.
Okay. Yeah, I can deal with that because I'll be home watching HBO on Sunday night because that's what I do.
True story. also, if I don't think it's this week, but soon we should check in on the Deuce.
Yeah, that's fine. No, I've been, you know, keeping up with the Deuce. I'm ready to roll whenever you want to do that.
Excellent. All right. Well, I feel like we've done our job here.
Okay.
All right, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.